Are you going to be able to continue doing that? That's the easy bit. Ityadishto bhagavata maha bhagavato ripa udvasami patyaha tattvam jikyasu achyutam. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, thus instructed his pure devotee Uddhava, who was eager to receive knowledge from the Lord. Uddhava then offered obeisances to the Lord and spoke as follows. Purport. Uddhava is described here as tattvam jigyasuhu, or desiring to know the truth. It is clear from previous verses that Sri Uddhava is a pure devotee of Lord Krishna and that he considers devotional service to Lord Krishna to be the perfection of life. Thus the words tat tvam jigyasuhu indicate that since Lord Krishna is about to leave the earth, Uddhava is most anxious to deepen his understanding of the Lord so that he may further advance in loving service at the Lord's lotus feet. Unlike an ordinary philosopher or scholar, a pure devotee is not eager to acquire knowledge for personal gratification. Om Agyana Timirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chachur Unmilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manoblishtam Stapitam Jena Bhuttale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tatisra Yadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhai Te Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinacharinam.
Of the qualities of a devotee described here. Sava Bhuta Sarit Chanto. Sarit means translated here as well-wisher, but Suhrit means close to the heart, or dear to others, and concerned for their welfare. Sarva-bhuta Suhrit Santo. And peaceful. Prabhupada describes in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita how a devotee is sympathetic to the sufferings of others and is concerned more for the welfare of others than they are concerned for the welfare of themselves. In that, they'll put themselves out, they'll put themselves into difficulty to see that others are making progress in their spiritual lives. And that means voluntarily accepting difficulties, even sometimes at the pain of death even, to assist others. But of course that assistance is not simply on a mundane level, you know, just feeding people or
clothing people, they were putting a shelter over their heads. But rather that assistance is in helping people elevate their understanding of existence and what is actually essential and non-essential. Sat asat, that which is permanent and that which is not. You know, the devotees understand the difference between the two. Na sato vijite bhavo, na bhavo vijite sata. The devotees understand the importance of that which is permanent and the relative importance of that which is temporary. And so they place emphasis not so much on the material acquisitions, knowing that in due course of time these things will be, you know, it's like the ebb and flow of the tide. The tide comes in and the tide goes out. It's a natural sequence of events. And, you know, sometimes at the beach it's very pleasurable. You can sit in the sun and enjoy the surf and just have a good time. And then on another occasion it's treacherous, it's dangerous, and you'll drown. It's the nature of the material world. And so the devotees, understanding the nature of the material world, samsara dava nala lida loka, it's a place of of suffering, actually. The material world is a place of suffering. The pleasures that we experience is just a temporary abatement, if you like, of the storm. You know, it's described in the Bhagavatam how the universe is contained within a lotus. And on top of that lotus, Lord Brahma sits. And he maintains the structure, if you like, of the creation within the stem of the lotus. And it's described that lotus is glowing, red hot, and that heat is generated by the desires of the living entities. And so, you know, that there is a fire from time to time, which is somewhat topical, is not an unusual occurrence. Especially if you live in a place like Australia. And you know, we're living in a, what is it? There's a poem that we learned at school. I think the first line starts off, I love a sunburnt country. I love a sunburnt country. Well, that's what happens when you live in a country like Australia. But the fire of material existence actually exists for everybody. You know, and the heat is generated by our desires. Our desire to enjoy, actually. And a natural consequence of that heat is fire, or basically suffering. We think that by pursuing our desires, we'll become happy and satisfied. But if we look at the history of the creation, we'll soon, and with somewhat of a dispassionate analysis, we'll learn very, very quickly that the pursuit of material desires simply brings about suffering. Maybe I saw on one of the devotees' blogs this week, one of the devotees says, there is pleasure in the material world. There is pleasure in the material world, but it's temporary. So na sato vijite bhavo, na bhavo vijite sataha. Ubhayo vipushtam kas twanayas katpadarshati. Those who have seen the truth and understand it
Don't put emphasis on the temporary material acquisition of things. But rather they put emphasis on cultivating a spiritual understanding of life. That's what the devotees, the sattvatas, those who are absorbed in that which is permanent, not something which will come and go of its own accord, according to the laws of material nature. You know, Prabhupada was writing to one devotee and he said, I'm very sorry to have lost the pen that Gopal gave me. Which has been a topic in our household because I also lost a pen when I was in India that Gopal Guru gave me. My wife said, oh, look, you know what Prabhupada said, but I shouldn't lament because somebody gave me the pen and somebody else took it away. It's the nature of the material world. And it reminds me also of when Prabhupada lost his Bhagavad Gita manuscript. It was stolen, which is, you know, a far more valuable possession than a pen. And yet what was Prabhupada's response? Well, Krishna gave us, and now Krishna has taken away. So the devotee sees behind the sufferings, ultimately the hand of the Lord. So this is another feature of the devotees, that they're jnana vijnana. Right? They are knowledgeable. And not only are they knowledgeable, but that knowledge is realized. It is understood through practical experience. So each one of us understands that. Don't take that Madanga, Babu. Otherwise you'll take all the Madangas and then it won't happen here. I've experienced that before. No, we need two. There's more than one program goes on here during the weekend. They've already taken one Madanga and there's a Madanga down at the farm, so they should have at least two Madangas down there. Yeah. So you won't be short of Madangas.
Yeah.
They may not be the best Madangas, but they'll have Madangas. So the devotees are jnana vijnana, they realize that they, because most of us have experienced pleasure. Right? But we've also experienced pain. In fact, you know, you have to have pleasure and pain to be able to differentiate between the two. But the devotees are able to see the connection between Krishna and the reactions that they receive, whether they're good or bad. They actually are able to recognize that this is all working according to Krishna's arrangement, according to Krishna's plan. It's not that there's, you know, Maya means to see something separate from Krishna. So even if there's some difficulty, there's some pain, I wish there will be, the devotee sees that ultimately connected to Krishna. They don't see it as something separate. And so then it's not bewildering for them. You know, why am I suffering? Well, you're in the material world. That's the nature of material existence. And actually, our real position is not to stay in the material world, but our real position is in the spiritual world, where, you know, suffering, birth, death, old age and disease are conspicuous by their absence in the spiritual realm. Although even in spiritual existence, in order for there to be the relishing of mellows, just as there is in the material world, there has to be this differentiation of rasa or experience. So the devotees understand the realities of my mum and dad used to dread going to church. It was around about, by the time it was, you know, the class or the sermon, we were ready to, you know, wreck the joint. It's a torture for kids. I used to think going to church and having to listen to the priest's sermon was a torture specifically created by parents just to give us a hard time. So, Pasyam Madatmakam Vishvam. So, the chair. No, someone's coming. Put the chair. The devotees understand that behind everything, ultimately Krishna is working. You know, even in a very difficult, you know, there's nobody who's innocent, basically, in the creation. We get what we deserve, as unpleasant as it may be. But it's a reminder, actually. It's a reminder. A pinching of material existence is a reminder that this is not the place to stay and be happy. So the devotees go out of their way to give people transcendental knowledge, even at great inconvenience for themselves. Prabhupada gives examples of Haridas Thakur. Who was, you know, caned in 22 or 23? 22 marketplaces. You know, because at that time in Bengal, the culture of Bengal was governed by the Muslims. Huh? Governed by the Muslims, and so that meant Sharia law. That meant that, you know, if you became apostate as a Muslim, then you were, according to the scripture of the Muslims, it's okay to kill you for such a crime, as it's considered to be a crime. So, Haridas Thakur was being punished for deserting his religion, if you like. So he's beaten, practically to the point of death. But we can see how concerned Haridas Thakur was for the welfare and the benefit of others. Because when he understood the anxiety of his would-be killers, that, you know, because Haridas Thakur was on such an elevated and transcendental platform that he really didn't feel the beating or the beatings that he was getting. And when he noticed that those who were flogging him were in total anxiety because they couldn't kill him, that he was concerned about their anxiety. And when he realized that their anxiety was that he wouldn't die, then he became unconscious to relieve them of their anxiety. There's a highly elevated transcendental platform. So then there was a debate. What should we do with Haridas Thakur? Well, Shall we bury him?
Well, that's the tradition of the Muslims, was to bury the dead. That's considered to be a sacred act. And they said, nah, that's too good for him. We'll just do what the Hindus do, we'll just throw him in a Ganga. Right? So they threw him in the Ganga, rather than bury him. And Haridas Thakur's body was then floated down the river, and Lord Chaitanya himself gathered Haridas Thakur from the Ganga. And it said when Lord Chaitanya picked him up, then all of the bruising and the markings on his body were removed and appeared then on Lord Chaitanya's form. So even at the pain of death, the devotees will go out of their way to help others in spiritual understanding, and even in very, very difficult and trying circumstances, they'll still see behind the difficulties the hand of God, basically, the hand of Krishna within everything. Sometimes it's a mystery, some are very difficult to understand how Krishna is actually working, especially in difficult and trying circumstances. It's almost impossible to see how Krishna is connected to the events. Well, somehow or another, in spite of difficult situations, difficult circumstances, the devotees will continue to work for the benefit of others. It's a qualification of a devotee. In fact, Krishna says that those who do that are more dear to him than even to than his own self. So, Uddhava understood Krishna's instructions. Krishna was about to leave, so he was telling him what he should do, how his vision and how his approach, how his understanding of the situation should be, and that he should fulfill one of Krishna's last desires, and that was to go to Bhadrik Ashram to see Naranarayan Rishi and give them the message from Krishna. But Uddhava wanted to inquire further, illustrating another characteristic of the devotee is, as mentioned here, tattva jigyasu. A devotee is very keen to understand this jnana vijnana, you know, this knowledge, and then realize it, experience it, put it into practice. We have tadvidhi pranipatena paripasnena sevaya upadikshanti te jnana jnaninastatvadasnaha. Very important verse from the Bhagavad Gita, because it contains the essence of knowledge, how to understand knowledge, how to realize knowledge, how to come to this point of jnanam vijnanam. It's also described, the jnanam vijnanam is described in the as a quality of a brahmana, quality of a person in the mode of goodness. Jnanam vijnanam astikyam. So devotee is very keen to understand transcendental knowledge and material knowledge, side by side. Understand the importance and the relevance of both. It's mentioned in the Upanishad. One should study vidya and avidya. Right? Vidya, avidya. to understand the relationship between the two, why one is more important than another, what their connection is, because, you know, Rupa Goswami teaches us yukta vairagya, which means we don't necessarily reject all of the learning, which may just be focused on material things. It has some connection with spiritual life, or can further the spiritual cause. And even if it comes from a material place, the devotee can take it, can utilize it. The Prabhupada says that Ramana, or I think he quotes Chanakya Pandit, as saying, a devotee or a Brahmana can take gold even from a filthy place. A qualified wife even from a family which might be below their caste, so to speak. And advice, good advice even from a fool. Right? You can take even good advice, like Prabhupada had that heart attack in New York and he was very sick. And I think he was in the hospital. They got one of the doctors, it was on the weekend, or the doctor came to see Prabhupada, I think he was in the hospital, and he checked Prabhupada out. He was drunk. He was the only doctor that they could get. And he said, there's nothing wrong with the old man, he just needs some exercise. So Prabhupada took that advice, and that's when Prabhupada started his daily walk. Huh? In fact, it's interesting, I mentioned this before, but Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on his health. He would walk at least an hour in a day, and then he would have a massage for an hour and a half. So, 2.5 hours in his day was, just on material things, looking after the body. You could say just material activity, but actually because it was essential for him to be able to do his service, then what is apparently material is actually spiritual. It's connected to his preaching and to his translation work, keeping him healthy. And like Prabhupada said, his astrological reading said that he would live, 70 years, was some quotation from the astrologer, I forgot what it is. So, 70 years, Prabhupada said, that was my allocation. So Prabhupada was 69 and had his 70th birthday on the Javadutta. And that's when he had the first of the heart attacks. So Prabhupada said, my time was up then. So Krishna has given me this extra time so that I can now go and preach. So, the devotees are keen to understand the tattva, the truth, about everything. Not so that they can, as it's pointed out here in the Bible, not so they can become greatly learned personalities. Of course, but a devotee is learned. But that's not the purpose of studying and learning. The purpose of learning is to make advancement in devotional service. Vidya Vinaya Sampane. I mentioned this last week. Vidya Vinaya Sampane. The qualities of learning means that despite being learned, one is also humble. Not that one just accumulates knowledge and then presents themselves as being a very learned person and wanting respect or recognition for that. Of course, it's automatic that as devotees, we will receive respect and recognition for our learning. But that's not the reason why we cultivate knowledge, as I've mentioned here. And that's why Uddhava is tattva jigyasu, he's inquisitive, because he wants to further advance his knowledge of service. And that's our process. You know, we approach Krishna in a particular way. We approach Krishna through the time-honored parampara system, the disciplic succession. Because Krishna recommends it, he says, this is the system by which you approach me. And you approach me by approaching my representative, the spiritual master. Because practically speaking, that means all of the devotees, because all of the devotees are representatives of Krishna. But of course, you know, within the relationships of the devotees, there are some who are senior, some who are junior, some who are on an equal level. So it is a science of rasa or relationship, and especially the relationship that we have with the spiritual master has to be understood properly. And Krishna manifests himself in the form of the devotees, and especially in the form of those devotees who take on the role of instructing and initiating, as being, you know, as good as God, God's representative, and as good as God. And in that mood, then one approaches the spiritual master, whether it's the Siksha Guru or the Diksha Guru, one approaches the spiritual master with certain qualifications in order to get this knowledge, this tattva, dhyanam, vijnanam. We approach Krishna in a particular way, not only through the spiritual master, just like we're studying the Bhagavatam, we're studying the Bhagavad Gita, we also approach the Shastra. In fact, it's mentioned, you know, we have three chets: Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. So they all support each other. And that way we can also then we can check the teachings of the sadhus and the guru by looking at the shastra. You know, if the sadhus or the guru were teaching us something different to the shastra, then we should be, you know, to have a way of measuring or checking. But for practical realization, practical implementation of the spiritual science, if you like, the spiritual process, one has to approach the spiritual master with humility, with submission, and inquiry. And that's what Uddhava is doing here. He's demonstrating that symptom of inquisitiveness, inquiry. Now, how can I make spiritual advancement? Especially, how can I make spiritual advancement so that I can help others? You know, it's automatic that we will be looked after by Krishna, especially if we're working for the benefit of others in preaching. That's automatic. If it's understood, Krishna will automatically look after the devotees. So, pranipat pariprasnena sevaya. So one has to inquire, but then, you know, in inquiring, one then has to be prepared to accept the answer, you know, accept the directions of the spiritual master. You know, Prabhupada said, you know, I only had one request of my spiritual master, and that was, how can I serve you? That's the mood of the disciple. And then when the spiritual master gives the instruction, then the disciple has to take it on and put it in, do it. Then Krishna, like I said, this is the transcendental, this is the mecca. This is how realization comes. Realization comes by putting the order of the spiritual master, even if it is most difficult, or even apparently, you know, impossible, right? Apparently impossible. One has to embrace that order and make it their life and soul. And you see that with Srila Prabhupada, interestingly enough. He was encouraged when he first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He wasn't even a disciple then. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada told Prabhupada, preach in the West. Preach in English to the West. It will be good for you and good for others. Because as we've discussed before, you know, this instruction wasn't unique. In that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave this instruction to many people. It wasn't just given to Prabhupada alone. It was given to many people. It was a standing order of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that this preaching be established in the West. And he sent his sannyasis to England and to Germany and different places, Thailand and other places outside of India. But of course, Srila Prabhupada made that order of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur his life's mission. And even at that stage of his career, you know, he just got married. He was in family life. So, you know, Prabhupada was thinking at that time, let me be successful as a businessman, I'll make my money, then I'll go and preach. I'll use my money to preach. You know, which is a story that we hear from time to time from different people. Let me first of all make my money and then I'll preach. Of course that didn't work. Prabhupada didn't have a great deal of... Well, he was successful, but again, you know, this is the material world, so he was successful, but then what happened? He was cheated, there was a, you know, economic crisis, and all of his money, you know, disappeared. Prabhupada didn't complain, oh, what's Krishna doing to me, was he taking it all away, how can Krishna be connected to everything that a person does when I'm suffering so badly? But Prabhupada didn't, you know, he didn't give up the order of his spiritual master. Yet it took him many years actually. And this was an instruction he received when he was in his early 20s. And he wasn't really able, even though he tried, even in the 50s, he tried establishing the League of Devotees in Jhansi. But it wasn't until Prabhupada was, you know, at the end of his life, at a time when his life was actually supposed to be finished, then he was actually able to effectively execute the order of his spiritual master. So, a good example, Prabhupada, a very good example of his service attitude. For the benefit of others, but also understanding that it's for his benefit also. So one needs to be inquisitive, or jigyasu, shreya, uttaman. One has to be inquisitive as to what is the real benefit, what exists as the real benefit for us. And so therefore the devotees emphasize the cultivation of this spiritual culture. It's a culture. The approaching the spiritual master in humility. Here, Uddhava is approaching Krishna directly in humility, with submission and inquiring. and then fully prepared to serve the order. But while Krishna is there, personally present, then Buddha is very keen to broaden his understanding. He's already a pure devotee. So in one sense, he's already perfect. It's not like he needs to learn anything more. As mentioned in the purport, he's already accepted that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's already an eternal associate of Krishna. So one says, what more does he need? You know, we saw this earlier on with Vasudeva. Vasudeva is already, you know, Krishna's father. Yet he says, you know, I'm so fallen, I'm only in the material world because I desire to have a son. I'm too attached to my family life, so now I'm still in the material world. Please instruct me, I'm a fallen householder. To Narada Muni. Was it Narada Muni? In Dwarka. So, now he's already reached the perfection of existence by dint of his personal relationship with Krishna, yet he's still inquiring, how do I? How do I increase my understanding of things so that I can further my service to you, basically. That's the mood, very nice mood of the devotee. That's the humility, if you like. So even though the devotee is on the topmost platform, he's, or she is still thinking, how can I make more advancement? And one of the devotees yesterday was saying to me, oh, Aniruddha Prabhu, you're doing the best service. Oh, yes, we may be doing the best service, because serving Krishna is the best. That doesn't mean that we're the best. Huh? And the devotee doesn't think, you know, I'm the best. Although sometimes it's happened, you know, I'm a book distributor. Or I'm Krishna's devotee, therefore I'm the best. Well, we are the best. So long as we're serving Krishna, we're the best. So we shouldn't. That's because the service to Krishna is the best, not because we are the best. In fact, we are not the best. There's always something that we could be doing better. We could always be doing something better. You know, we may be doing the best, but you know, we could improve. Usually, there's certainly plenty of room for improvement. So, the devotees don't rest on their laurels, but rather they endeavour for further perfection, if you like, for improvement of the situation. If we are the best, then that's because Krishna has made us so, or our spiritual master has benedicted us with some great mercy. But you know, there's a story of a devotee who approached Prabhupada and said, you know, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada said, you know, you're not the most anything. But it's nice. It's a nice meditation. It's tough for me. Jigyasu, to remain enthusiastic and constantly critical. Actually, one has to be critical. And critical in the sense of, critical inquiry, not critical from the point of view of nitpicking or, you know, hopelessly absorbed in just
interminable analysis of everything, was still a devotee who remains, you know, alert and inquisitive. How to see things from the spiritual or the transcendental perspective so that we understand everything in relationship to Krishna and everything in relationship to Krishna's service. That is actually a great challenge. Because Maya is always trying to deviate us off into some other activity not connected to Krishna and related to personal enjoyment. But our experience is that when we get distracted like that, then usually enjoyment becomes, it may be the preliminary attractor, if you like, but it is not the final result. Usually the end result of enjoyment, so-called enjoyment in the material world, is suffering and samsara, more birth and death, and the embarrassment of the ignorance that comes about as a result. So therefore everybody's always keen to remain in a healthy state of understanding, and I do that by inquiring. Pranipat Padi Prashnena, always asking questions about how to improve my spiritual understanding of things, how to improve my devotional service, how to become a servant of everybody. Practically, how to become a servant of it, because there's another story that I heard from Hari Sawyer about everybody's servant is nobody's servant. Right? That's why we have a guru, or we have, we take shelter of particular people. Not that we have to take instruction from everybody, otherwise you'll be running around like a chook with your head chopped off. But we take shelter of, we have shelter of particular personalities who are our spiritual guides, and we follow their order. And in that way, then we remain a servant of everybody, knowing that our engagement is ultimately beneficial for the whole creation, because it's meant for the upliftment of everybody. This is the para upakara, the topmost work. And of course Prabhupada says the para upakara is the distribution of Krishna consciousness. That's real welfare order. So a devotee's cultivation of knowledge is to bring them to that point where they're working for the benefit of everybody. And that's this qualification of the devotee here. Sarva Bhuta Surich. Surit. Sarva Bhuta Surit. The friend of everybody. And Shanto, peaceful, not disturbed by material desires, but satisfied in their devotional service. Jnana Vijnana. Learned, self-realized, nishchayaha, interesting word here, nishchayaha, that verse, nishchayaha, means fixed on these things, not flickering. So that's why, again, inquiry is required. How do I remain steady? Quality of a devotee, dhira. And, fixed in seeing Krishna behind the workings of everything. That takes a bit of practice. Takes a bit of practice to see that even the difficulties, the misbehaviour of others, is ultimate, or the the reactions that we get, we see it all ultimately connected to Krishna. It's a pretty powerful vision. Okay. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
You got the seasons in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
So how do the residents in the spiritual world experience duality?
How do they experience duality?
Maybe.
They don't experience it in the same way that we do. It's not so much duality as it is variety. Right? Because, you know, what do they say? Variety is the spice of life, or the mother of enjoyment. Right? So, you know, you have to have, you know, the chili, and then you have the, you know, the yogurt to cool it off. Huh? You have the sambar and the dosa, and then you have tamarind rice, lemon rice, plain rice, and yogurt rice. To enjoy the tastes, you know, so it's variety in the spiritual world as opposed to in the material world, you know. Actually, it's variety in the material world also, because the material world is a reflection, ultimately, of the spiritual realm. It's a perverted reflection. So, in our experience of this variety, there's also a lot of suffering. But the variety experienced in the spiritual world is just that. Variety in the realm of transcendental experience. So, even in separation, which is painful, right? Separation from one's beloved is painful in the material realm. In the spiritual realm, it's actually heightening, enhancing the relishing of meeting, sambhoga. So there's vipralambha, there's separation, and then there's coming together again. There's separation of Radha and Krishna, so there's lamentation, anticipation. So, you know, there's then the messengers of Radha and Krishna, you know, they get together and they work out the arrangement, yes, we'll meet in such and such a place and such a time. So then there's the heightened anticipation of meeting. And it's also heightened by the fact that they're dodging the elder, you know, the seniors, who are keeping an eye out to keep them separate. Abhimanyu's mother and her sister, isn't it? They're always on the lookout for Krishna to keep him away from Radharani. So there's all this separation and then meeting. In fact, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, we emphasize the separation. Because that enhances the mood of reunion. So, it's variety, as I said, as opposed to duality. Anybody else like to comment on that point? You know, there's some times in the forest of Vrindavan, Vrinda Devi orchestrates and facilitates the meeting of Radha and Krishna. There's sometimes in Vrindavan circumstances where all of the seasons all at once manifest. Now, what happens then? That's an experience. So, you know, there are experiences in the spiritual world that we can't have in the material world. We don't even conceive of how it's possible. But according to the orchestration and the arrangements and the desire to please Radha and Krishna to bring them together, then all of these things are arranged by the residents of Vrindavan for Radha and Krishna's pleasure.
To the what?
To the suffering.
To the suffering, yes.
I'm wondering if, like, in the example of Prabhupada, another great acharya, he is who experienced your virtues, but we can understand that Nitya citizen knows in course of reaction, obviously, that somehow the Krishna arrangement to create a more favorable situation is really critical.
Maybe. Yes, it's a fact that voluntary acceptance of tapasya, and you know our tapasya is preaching. You know, sometimes the devotees want to take on extra austerities. You know, so they. They get a little bowl for breakfast, then they pile it right up. Huh? You know, the austerity of controlling the tongue, for example. Or, you know, they decide, well, I'll just sleep on the bare floorboards. To make spiritual advancement, because that's not really, it may be beneficial to. Our main austerity is to preach. And it's interesting, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he even encouraged his brahmacharis to eat rice and lakodasi if they were so weak, you know, that they couldn't go out and preach because they hadn't eaten anything substantial. So he, even on lakodasi, encouraged them, eat rice, you know, eat, because Bengal is basically, you know, a function on rice. And there's a few other places in India I know where they function on rice also. So, you know, there's austerities involved in preaching, and so therefore, even Prabhupada, you know, he wanted to do that, is eat sumptuous prasadam and sleep properly, you know, rest yourself. Chant Hare Krishna. Be spiritually and physically strong enough to go and then, you know, help others. Because it is hard. It's not easy to do that. You know, people will ignore you, they'll curse you, they'll spit on you, they'll, you know, go out of their way and make life tough for you. But that's the nature of material existence. You know, there's every one of us, even if we're working in a so-called material job, it's not like everybody just steps aside when you walk through, you know, and they say, oh yeah, come on. Right? There's struggle in everything that we do. Right? Is there anybody here who doesn't have to struggle in their existence? Please raise your hands. Nobody. Everybody's struggling. What was your week at work like this week, Jagannath Ram? Any problems? Everything just went smoothly. Fish? Actually, it's good for us now. You know, economic crisis is fantastic for preaching. Not so good if you want to keep a job. So, you know, whatever you do, there's always going to be struggle and obstacles, whatever we do. And so therefore, you know, especially for the preachers, especially for, you know, the very advanced devotees, these arrangements are made just to underline and underscore the wonderful qualities of the devotees. So, you know, despite a heart attack, and despite being, you know, an old man in a totally alien culture who, you know, wasn't going to use knife and forks and was prepared to sit on the floor. You know, and even he said, you know, I've given you basically, you know, just a floor to sleep on. Just like, you know, some of the stories that I've heard from the devotees here, we don't hear it very often because the devotees who established this temple are not here, but I used to hear stories when I joined up of the devotees were so poverty stricken that they didn't have any plates. And so breakfast, and you know, breakfast was just cereal with orange rind. You know what I mean? It was like porridge with orange rind to give it some flavour. Served out on sheets of greased paper. That was the plate. Huh? So, you know, struggled like anything to establish Krishna consciousness. You know, in one sense, we've sort of got a bit cushy. We've got a marble palace and, you know, the deities are always well looked after. And, you know, if you want some Mahaprasad, then you only have to wait, you know, at most 2 or 3 hours. And then you know, you can more or less get whatever you like. In fact, you know, there are people who even go into the boga room and take the boga. So, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to lock things up because we've got people walking into the cool room and walking off with boxes of peaches and stuff. So, you know, Krishna's pretty liberal. But in those days, you know, the devotees weren't accepted. You know, these days if you go into a 7-Eleven or a Coles Express or, you know, go to the bank, then, you know, what do people say? Hare Krishna. In those days they look at you like you were an alien from outer space. So it was to the credit of those devotees and the credit of Srila Prabhupada. So in one sense Krishna arranges the circumstance. So even there are great trials and tribulations. That's just say for the glorification of Haridas Thakur. It's a glorification of Srila Prabhupada. It's a glorification for anybody who voluntarily takes on the austerity of preaching, especially. Knowing that there will always be obstacles. There will always be some challenge. There will always be some resistance. And in one sense, that's our challenge now. You know, we have an opportunity. We know we actually have an opportunity, just as Prabhupada had an opportunity. We also have an opportunity. But it's not going to be easy to take advantage of those opportunities that exist for us. It appears that people are more amenable to spiritual possibilities, shall we say. But how are we going to connect them? How are we going to connect them when, you know, they're so far out floating in orbit, you know, somewhere a long, long way from Krishna? They're sort of turning towards, you know, the possibility, the realm of possibilities in spiritual life, but then how do we connect them to Krishna? And especially with Krishna in the manifestation that we know, in the form of worship of, you know, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and the chanting of Hare Krishna. And, you know, how do we connect people to that? We're all connected. But, you know, some people, when they come into this, when they walk in here and they see what's going on, they go, whoa, far out. How can I possibly do that? Even if they recognise the benefit of it, they think, ooh. It's interesting because, you know, this building, if you look at it from the outside, it just looks like an ordinary old building. I've had people come in and they look at the temple and they go, wow. And they say to me, you know, who would have thought that behind that wall was this? Mm-hmm. Who would have, you know, for us it's just normal, you know, we come in,
Jai Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisances. Now, when they see us doing that, they think, what's wrong with these guys? That's our culture, but it's not the predominant culture. So how do we convert the predominant culture of, you know, whatever it happens to be, enjoyment, entertainment? Basically, we live in an entertainment, in a society revolving around entertainment. So there's a challenge for us. Big challenge, actually. Considering what Prabhupada's vision wasn't just global, his vision was universal. So in order to fulfill that, we've got our bit. We've got Melbourne and, you know, Victoria or whatever. We've got to convert that into the spiritual world. There's a challenge for us. That'll keep us busy for a while. And, you know, it will not be easy. I dare say that you've probably got a few more lifetimes of work ahead of us. That's why, you know, Jabhatakamara said to me once, you know, we better get this Gurukul right, because we're going to have to come back next lifetime and we want to make sure that we get looked after. Bit selfish. Selfish vision. Let's get the Gurukul fixed up properly so that when we come back, we'll be looked after. So that we can then go back and, you know, do the preaching. So here's a challenge for you. But ultimately, for the glorification of Krishna and for the glorification of the devotees, those difficulties. Well, we should finish here. Prakrashima Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhakti Sangha.